good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world, and thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy, as usual, and you are now listening to On The Radar News Analysis, your trusted source for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, this isn't just about headlines. On The Radar News Analysis is a space for deep, meaningful engagement where we interrogate the stories shaping our country. We ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots using archived audio, expert opinion, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Now, interviews are long form and in-depth because some stories deserve more than just a soundbite. Now, we come prepared with the facts, the context, and your questions so that every conversation takes us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath. Now, remember, On The Radar is available live across Eagle FM's national radio frequencies via Eagle FM website, and also through the, through our interactive Eagle FM website, and you can also subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, interview highlights, and exclusive clips. Now, so stay with us, and as we step beyond the surface, this is On The Radar, where Namibia comes to think. Signing off with our discussions today, the 2025 Namibia-European Union Partnership Dialogue took place today on Monday, the 1st of September 2025 at the Namibia Institute of Public Administration and Management, also known as NIPAM in Windhoek. Now, the dialogue was co-chaired by the Minister of International Relations and Trade, Selma Ashipala Musavi, and the Ambassador of the European Union to Namibia, Anna Beatrice Martens. It brought together senior officials from Namibian government offices, ministries and agencies, the EU delegation, and both resident and non-resident EU member states. Now, the event opened in the morning with an official ceremony followed by a full day of deliberations. Discussions covered Namibia, EU economic and development cooperation, as well as the progress of the Memorandum of Understanding and Roadmap on the Strategic Partnership for Green Hydrogen and the Critical Raw Materials Value Chain, as well as multilateralism, women, peace and security, and the Pact for the Future. Speaking at the event, Minister Ashipala Musavi expressed Namibia's deep appreciation for the consistent and tangible support extended by the European Union towards national priorities, highlighting notable initiatives such as the $730 million Namibian dollar financing for Namibia's green industrialization project, the TED RED project on renewable energy transition, the Etunda Feedlot Project, and EU humanitarian aid supporting Namibia's drought response. She said such support is a statement to the long-standing bonds of cooperation between Namibia and the European Union, rooted in shared values, common interests, and mutual respect. The minister underlined the significance of the 6th National Development Plan, also known as NDP-6, launched by the President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah in July 2025, as the final step toward achieving Vision 2030 and Namibia's ambition of becoming an industrialized nation. Now, NDP-6 is structured around four key pillars, being economic growth and resilience for diversification, industrialization, and building resilience. Also, human development, investment in education, health, and social protection, environmental sustainability, responsible for management of natural resources and climate, as well as good governance, transparency, accountability, and strong democratic institutions. She called on the EU and all partners to continue supporting Namibia in this critical development journey. Minister Ashipala Musavi placed the Namibian European Union partnership within broader frameworks, including Vision 2030, SADC's Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan, AU Agenda 2063, and the UN 2030 Agenda, noting that all thus reinforce trade, investment, peace, and social cohesion. She highlighted the importance of platforms such as the AU-EU ministerial meeting in Brussels, which was held in May 2025, and which reaffirms commitments to peace, security, climate action, digital innovation, and sustainable development. She stressed that Namibia values multilateralism, international law, and collective solutions to global challenges such as drought, climate change, wildfires, energy insecurity, migration, and youth unemployment. Now, Namibia believes no country is too big to act alone and none too small to contribute to peace and development. Marking 2025 as a milestone year, she noted Namibia's upcoming commemoration of the 25th anniversary of UNSC Resolution 13-2025 on women, peace and security, which will be celebrated both in Namibia and at the UN headquarters. Lastly, she emphasized that the dialogue is crucial for strengthening Namibia and the European Union ties and reaffirmed Namibia's readiness to cooperate with EU member states on trade, investment, sustainable development and shared priorities. She expressed confidence that discussions would be fruitful and productive, consolidating the excellent bilateral relationship. Let's take a listen to Minister Selma Ashipala Musavi.
The last political dialogue between Namibia and the European Union took place in 2022 due to various factors. Notwithstanding beneficial contacts and strategic engagements between Namibia and the European Union have continued throughout the period since our last engagement. This continued engagement is testament to the strength and resilience of our partnership. It's therefore with great pleasure that I warmly welcome you all to the Namibia-European Union Partnership Dialogue, a platform that is so vital for Namibia and the EU to promote and deepen our partnership, enhance collaboration, reinforce existing agreements, build mutual trust, and reaffirm our shared commitment to common goals and interests. Our dialogue today, which is taking place under very difficult geopolitical conditions, will focus on a wide range of areas of mutual interest. It also provides an opportunity to engage in meaningful and beneficial discussions on our shared priorities, particularly those outlined in Namibia's Vision 2030, the Sixth National Development Plan, the EU's Global Gateway Initiative, among others. Excellencies, distinguished guests, political and economic relations between Namibia and the European Union were established 35 years ago this year, culminating in a long-standing and constructive partnership grounded in a mutual commitment to sustainable development, equality, democratic values, and a common approach to a broad range of regional and global issues. Granted, the member states of the European Union are industrialized and economically developed, while Namibia continues to strive for the same. Nevertheless, the interests and aspirations of our respective citizens remain inextricably linked. Our economies are complementary. Many challenges we face, whether environmental, social, or economic, are interconnected and call for joint coordinated responses. It's important to underscore that the European Union remains one of Namibia's largest and most significant trading partners. Over the years, trade between Namibia and the EU has steadily increased. The EU is Namibia's largest export market for a variety of products, including fish, meat, table grapes, precious stones and metals, ores and charcoal, among others. Equally, Namibia imports high-value goods from EU member states, such as mineral fuels and oils, pharmaceuticals, machinery, general use equipment, vehicles, and automotive parts. In addition to goods, the EU's robust service sector is also active in Namibia, particularly in finance, technology, and communications. This dynamic relationship represents a win-win exchange and mutually beneficial trade partnership. However, like all such relationships, it requires regular review and adaptation to reflect current realities, especially in Namibia and the evolving international and regional economic landscape. As a government, we highly appreciate the tangible and consistent support extended by the European Union towards our national priorities. The list of specific projects and programs funded by the EU in Namibia is extensive. However, allow me to highlight just a few.
Ambassador Anna Beatrice Martens opened the Namibia-EU Partnership Dialogue alongside Minister Selma Ashipala Musavi, describing the event as a momentous step in deepening relations between Namibia and the European Union. She highlighted the strong presence of Team Europe, with resident ambassador charges their affairs and representatives from several EU member states in attendance. Now, the ambassador noted that the dialogue came at a significant moment, 35 years since Namibia's independence and the establishment of formal relations with the EU, and 25 years since EU-AU relations began. Reflecting on history, she recalled the EU's early support for Namibia's liberation and how relations have since evolved from a donor-beneficiary mode to one of the equal partnership grounded in democracy, peace, and human rights. She emphasized that the EU remains Namibia's largest export market, third largest source of imports, and most diversified trading partner. Through the Economic Partnership Agreement, Namibia continues to enjoy duty and quota-free access to the EU market, maintaining a positive trade balance. Ambassador Martens praised the strategic partnership on green hydrogen and electrical raw materials launched in 2022 as a new phase in EU-Namibia relations. She cited initiatives such as the High Iron Project under the EU's Global Gateway Strategy, which support green industrialization, job creation, and Namibia's role in shaping a sustainable global energy future. Now, beyond energy, she stressed EU support for early childhood education, vocational training for youth, gender equality, transparency, and the fight against corruption and organized crime, all key to building a resilient and inclusive economy. She commended Namibia's ambitious Sixth National Development Plan, NDP-6, noting strong alignment with EU and Team Europe priorities, especially in improving opportunities for young people. She further highlighted Namibia's leadership in promoting gender equality, which resonates with Europe's own vision of empowerment and inclusion. Now, on the international stage, the ambassador underlined Namibia's growing voice in regional and global forums, aligning with the EU's commitment to multilateralism and the rule of law. She reaffirmed that the EU values Namibia's leadership and remains committed to cooperation, sustainable development, and fair rules-based trade. Now, closing her remarks, she stressed that amid global challenges from conflicts to economic uncertainty, the EU and Namibia remain united in championing cooperation over confrontation and in supporting lasting peace and sustainable solutions worldwide. Let's take a listen to Anna Beatrice Martin.
To open today's partnership dialogue together with you, Honorable Minister Ashipala, overseeing Namibia's international and trade relations. Today's dialogue is a momentous step in the relationship between Namibia and the EU and a valuable opportunity to deepen our mutual understanding on a broad range of topics and to further enhance our rich cooperation and cement our relations. Let me stress how much we appreciate the presence of so many partners here, distinguished partners here this morning, from especially on the cooperation side, which will make our dialogue all the more richer. And I'm very glad to have the participation from colleague diplomats from several EU member states, the resident ambassadors from Germany, Portugal, and Spain, and the Chargé d'Affaires of France, Finland, as well as our non-resident ambassador of Lithuania, the Chargé d'Affaires of Poland, and councillors of Sweden, Denmark, Belgium, Ireland, and the Netherlands. And you can see that we are here represented as Team Europe. We meet at a moment of deep significance of 35 years since Namibia's independence and the establishment of formal relations with the European Union. It is also 25 years since the EU-AU relations were established, and ours, it's fair to say, is a partnership forged on the principles of solidarity, rooted in shared values of democracy, peace, and respect of human rights. And the EU-AU summit that we will be soon witnessing in November is another milestone in cementing relations with Namibia and the African continent. From the European Union's early political support for UN Resolution 435 and key humanitarian support during the liberation struggle, to today's collaborative initiatives in trade, education, agriculture, governance, and green industrialization, our relationship has evolved from donor beneficiary to one of equal partners. We share common interests and values in many areas and aspire a partnership that generates benefits for the people of Namibia and Europe. We do not say it often enough, but the European Union's single market remains Namibia's largest export market, its third largest source of imports, and its most diversified trading partner. Our economic partnership agreement offers duty and quota-free access to the EU market, which Namibia has been able to use to its advantage, maintaining a consistently positive trade balance. The EU has also been a strong supporter of regional and continental trade integration and has been supporting the AFCFTA since its inception. This success reflects the strength and complementarity of our economies and underscores our shared commitment to fair, rules-based trade as a driver of sustainable economic growth and job creation. The strategic partnership of green hydrogen and critical raw materials, launched in 2022, has placed our relationship on a new level. It also demonstrates what we can achieve together when we join forces. Projects like High Iron, supported under the Global Gateway Strategy, are not only pioneering a green industrialization, but are also creating jobs for Namibians, advancing technology, and placing Namibia at the forefront of a sustainable global energy future. But our cooperation is broader than energy. We are investing in early childhood education, vocational skills for youth, support to gender equality, and joint efforts to strengthen transparency and fight corruption and organized crime. These are building blocks for a resilient, inclusive economy. We commend Namibia for its ambitious and visionary sixth National Development Plan, We are pleased that the priorities of the EU and Member States as Team Europe are closely aligned with NDP 6 and the overall objective to improve opportunities for Namibian youth. Rest assured, Honourable, that the EU remains a reliable partner on cooperation and trade. And we also offer our readiness to strengthen the political part of our relationship on regional and global issues of common interest. Namibia's commitment to gender equality, exemplified by its female leadership, resonates deeply with Europe's own journey to empower women in prominent roles, reflecting our unified vision for equality and inclusion. Namibia's growing role in regional global forums aligns with the EU's vision for a collaborative, multilateral world order based on the rule of law. As we have recently seen at the Summit for the Future, the EU-AU Ministerial and elsewhere, the EU values Namibia's voice and leadership on the international stage. As we navigate global challenges, from regional conflicts to economic uncertainties, our commitment to multilateralism and the United Nations Charter stands firm. We champion cooperation over confrontation and support lasting peace and sustainable solutions worldwide. As we engage in a comprehensive partnership dialogue today, I look forward to taking stock of our common achievements so far, but also to look at opportunities of deepening our mutual understanding and trust on global and regional policy issues, notably in our respective neighborhoods, to explore alignments on multilateral issues of common interest. And you pointed out, Honorable, World Peace and Security Pact for the Future.
Of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We still have more coming your way. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Today's e-paper is available for you to consume social and economic news that is well thoroughly searched up. That is in The Villager newspaper. Now, today's story covers, today's headlines are as following. Government debt up by 66 billion Namibian dollars in 5 years. Between 2020 and August 2025, government debt increased by 65.9 billion Namibian dollars. Energy costs and inputs dwindle on green schemes. Road accidents reduce Namibia's human capital. Citizens want cautious drivers. Namibia to use bilateral relations to achieve national goals. Cancer APO project raises 38.4 million Namibian dollars since 2000. FMB Schools Mountain Bike League draws to an exciting close. Catch up on the stories and more in only today's e-paper, that is The Villager. If you want to subscribe to make sure that you receive tri-weekly dose of economic and social news that is out every Monday, Wednesday and Friday, send it WhatsApp text message on 081-200-4144 and never miss out on economic news. That being said, let's pause here again and we'll be back shortly to continue with our news.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The government of Namibia, through the Ministry of Environment, Forestry, and Tourism, METEF, hosted a workshop at the Avani Hotel in Windhoek on Friday, the 29th of August, 2025, to represent the first draft of the Nature, People and Climate Investment Plan, also known as NPCIP. Now, the workshop follows Namibia's progress in climate action planning, even as challenges such as land degradation, socioeconomic disparities and rural development constraints persist. With agriculture remaining a critical sector, nature-based solutions, also referred to NBS, have emerged as a promising approach to advance climate mitigation and adaptation efforts. However, natural-based solutions face challenges of their own, including the impermanence of carbon sequestration and competing land use demands. Now, to confront this threat and build a sustainable future, Namibia is developing a comprehensive multi-sectoral strategy that integrates livelihoods and business models into sustainable ecosystem management. The Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism secured a grant of $500 from the Climate Investment Funds, also known as CIF, to prepare the NPCIP following the successful submission of an expression of interest in the program. Now, a national scoping mission for the preparation of the plan was conducted in Windhoek in September 2023. The African Development Bank, acting as the multilateral development bank for the project, partnered with METEF to engage Genesis Analytics in the developing of the NPCIP. More on the story when we return from the marketplace as we make room for a scheduled commercial break. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an
Save and win at WB in the Pick-A-Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Buy 2 times Rhodes 1 liter 100% fruit juice for only $49.99. 2 times 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $139.99 with Smart Buy. 400ml Vaseline Body Cream or Lotion for $44.99. And 2 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $54.99 with Smart Buy. Learn more about Pick-A-Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. As earlier stated, the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism secured a grant of $500,000 from the Climate Investment Funds to prepare the NPCIP following the successful submission of an expression of interest in the program. Now, a national scoring mission for the preparation of the plan was conducted in Windhoek in September 2023. The African Development Bank, acting as the multilateral development bank for the project, partnered with the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism to engage Genesis Analytics in developing the NPCIP. Now, the draft plan has been informed by desk-based research, key informant interviews, as well as feedback from workshops and stakeholders consultations held across 12 regions of Namibia. According to the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, the workshop's primary objective is to present and validate the draft investment plan with key stakeholders, including government institutions, regional councils, community-based organizations, civil society organizations, and NGOs. Like I said, that however, natural-based solutions face challenges of their own, including the impermanence of carbon sequestration and competing land use demand. For those of you who be wondering what that actually means, carbon sequestration is the process of capturing and storing atmospheric carbon dioxide. It is one method of reducing the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere with the goal of reducing global climate change. Now let's take a listen to one of the speakers at the event, as well as drafting on how this, on the structure of how it is going to be deduced, with some questions posed by those who were among the attendees. Let's take a listen.
In this board will comprise of the senior supplier, the MDP, and the executive. Executive in this case, we have the Minister of Environment, Forest and Tourism, and then we have the Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries and Water and Land Reform, as well as the Minister of Urban Development. Because most of the elements which were presented, they deal with this ministry, so we decided to put them as executives. On the same level, we have the steering committee or the governing board, which will comprise of different stakeholders. Some not listed here, but we can still list them in our groups, just to provide guidance to the executive decisions to be taken. Now, under that, we have the project director, national project director. This is usually the colleagues from the multilateral environmental agreements. So we have the deputy director, proposed to be the National Project Director. He's here in the room. Under that, we have the PIU, which is the Project Implementation Unit, also housed under the Department of Environmental Affairs in the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Tourism. Under that, we propose to have the National Project Manager. Project Manager will be dealing with day-to-day planning of the project, assisted by the accountant, and the procurement officer will be dealing with the procuring of required material and so forth. Then, because this project will be implemented in different regions, in the regions, we anticipate to have the regional implementation unit who will be housed in the regional councils. And then there we anticipate to have a regional coordinator for each region. Now under this regional implementation unit, we are also going to have the regional implementation platform, the RIP, which is comprised of the constituency development committees, traditional authorities and other stakeholders who are interested in the project, including the private sector and NGOs. Now that's at the regional level. And then we have now the constituency development committees, traditional authorities who will work directly with the village development committees and farmers. So this is what we plan to have. So if there are any inputs on how we can organize the project, we can take those.
Okay, I do stay corrected if this is a point that is really touched on a bit later. But I think a more transparent organizational plan would be one that looks like a work breakdown structure. So you see at the executive level, Ministry of Environment is doing exactly A, B, and C. Ministry of Agriculture is doing A, B, and C. I think it allows for a certain level of transparency and just accountability. Because if somebody were to look at this, we're like, oh, okay, Ministry of Environment is here, but what are we doing exactly? If they're at the executive level, but what is their point of view? I think that would be nice to just have it in a work breakdown structure format.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think if you look at the document itself, we have more or less the terms of reference for these different entities here. Yeah, maybe we can expand on that.
Yes, on the regional implementation, I say it's regional council. Our proposal, a NGO, is the main implementer under the supervision of the regional council. Because there is too much bureaucracy in the government system, which can contribute to things will not happen on time. There's a procurement system, there's a what system, there's a, and it's a lot. So, our proposed NGO in the regions to implement the actual work of the projects, what the committees, and report to the regional council.
We agree?
Yes.
Can I see by friends? Okay.
With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. we have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. You're still tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, of course, we move on to another topic, another discussion that has been quite on many Namibians' lips and hearts and minds the past weekend. The morning of the 30th of August, of course, was marked with horror as a head-on collision between vehicle carrying correctional office officials and police officials claimed the lives of 16 people on the road between Mariental and Kalkrand. Of course, the deceased are part of the police and correctional services, adding to the long list of expertise and skilled people lost in vehicle accidents, as road and vehicle-related accidents claim more people. CEO of the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund of Namibia, Rosario Martins-Hausiku, while extending her condolences to the families of the victims affected by the horrific accident, stated that the fund would assist in honoring the deceased with dignified burials while assisting the injured with adequate medical care. Now, she further encouraged the family members of the deceased and injured to contact a nearby MVA Fund Service Center. President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah also shared a message of condolence to the families of the deceased, stating that her heart goes out to the families who have lost their loved ones and to the men and women of the Namibian Correctional Service and the Namibian Police Force who are mourning their colleagues. No words can truly capture the depth of this loss. Now let's pause for here right now and we'll be back shortly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Joining us in studio now is Ignatius Berend. He's an advanced life support, also known as paramedic, based in Mariental. Good afternoon, Ignatius Berend, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Ms. Happy. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Of course, we're talking about a case that has affected a lot of Namibians, and not just the families of those whose lives were lost in the accident that happened in Mariental. Berend, you are assigned to walk that side. Of course, you will know more on this aspect. But before we get into just some of the questions that are kind of like common ground that perhaps we civilians and pedestrians and drivers should be cautious of, can you just give us a highlight of actually what transpired over the weekend?
Okay. So basically, Saturday morning, there was a tragic head-on collision with a non-Pol vehicle and the NCS vehicle as well, which occurred 10 kilometers out of Mariental. approaching the side of Kalkand, okay, 10 kilometers out. So basically, in the early mornings, there was a collision. In this collision, there was several occupants in both vehicles. Okay, I'm going to speak under correction
of
the numbers of the occupants. But basically, we had 13 of the MCS occupants, and then I believe it was 6. I wasn't personally on scene, but I was consulted telephonically to assist with dispatch.
Mm.
So, So in essence, we had a mass casualty where people were. Our fellow Namibians of the NAMPOL and NCS organization sustained severe injuries, and there were also fatalities, unfortunate fatalities involved as well.
Mm-hmm. I understand that 15 people's lives has been lost as a result of that accident.
Yes.
Parent, just how far is an ambulance service?
How far is an ambulance service?
No, sorry, pardon me. Just an interruption from my side. How far actually is an ambulance station? I'm not sure if I'm using the right terminology from where the accident actually takes place. And how long does it take before they get on service or before they actually can come on board to help those that are injured?
Okay, so the hospital is located in Mariendal itself. And the accident occurred 10 kilometers out of Mariendal. Okay, to my understanding, how the dispatch information was. So it was early morning hours, and the crew had to be assembled and informed, and dispatch had to be done. You know, to get the people ready for the mass casualty. So usually, so they drove 10 kilometers, but the ambulances are stationed at the hospital itself.
Correct. Thank you, Baron. Now, in terms of capacity, human resource capacity for those who are, of course, emergency medical care, people who can be able to be dispatched, are we perhaps sufficient in that, or is there a lack of sufficient people who can be able to come on scene and actually help such accidents? And I'm not just talking about Mariendal. I'm talking about on your Kahanja to your road between Kahanja to Windhoek. That's also a very common area where accidents happen, on many other roads. Is this something that perhaps needs to be looked on or into that maybe might help save people's lives?
To be honest, program itself, or the industry that we are in, the emergency medical rescue services, is one that is still being seen in its infancy. The recognition for what a paramedic is and what the emergency care practitioner and emergency care technician is not recognized, or it isn't a renowned profession, to be honest. So I believe more people need to be educated on what we actually do. More people need to be given the opportunity for studying, and good awareness should be raised to have more people in the profession itself or in the industry in order to get more people involved or in the career and to be employed, you know, not just at state, but in private sector as well.
Mm-hmm. Now we're in September. We just entered in the month of September, and of course we are heading close to the festive season, and we have to be honest and factual by saying that more accidents actually happen this time around of the festive season. Would you say perhaps it's due to human errors majorly, or perhaps just other factors that contribute, and what can actually we do about it? By us, I'm referring to pedestrians, I'm referring to civilians, and I'm referring to the drivers of the on the road.
Okay. From my side, I'm no expert on it, but I believe the MDA Fund and you know, the Roads Authority, these are people that have been coming together to try and brainstorm and to do studies to find out what the root cause is or what the several factors are. So I can actually speak from an expert's point of view, but I believe it's several things. Though it, from my side, it can be negligence. For example, being distracted, being on your phone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Driving while you're fatigued. Okay? And knowing that you're unable to fully focus. Okay? and driving under the influence, I believe, also one of them. And these are things that I've experienced as a practitioner in the past 7 years. When you come on scene, you know, DUIs are common, you know, distractions are common that cause all of this. Jaywalking is also a factor, even on B1 roads, on the highways, jaywalking also. So there are several things, but negligence, you know, and just, you know, how can I put it, our attitude or behavior towards how we use our roads is one of the biggest challenges that we have, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I think I will second you on that one. And lastly, actually, the CEO of MBA Fund, spoke about how, I can remember quite the percentage, but it was very high. I think it was more than 70% how most accidents are a result of human error. And, even though they really have road safety campaign every towards end of the year in collaboration with the roads authority, I think sometimes it just doesn't go, you know, the message just doesn't reach the masses, or not necessarily that it doesn't reach them, but that it just kind of doesn't stick. People maybe just kind of like very negligent about it. But still on this topic, kindly talk to us about, we often celebrate, where we hear maybe, an accident took place, 5 people were involved, and then you hear that, perhaps only 3 people lost their lives and 2 people survived. We kind of celebrate the 2 lives that have been, that have survived, not knowing that sometimes yes, they've survived, but they go on to live very hard lives because they sustained massive injuries. Just kind of go into that for us.
Just repeat your question so I can get clarity on it. What exactly, should I enlighten on?
Perhaps maybe some of the common fractures that people go through and the type of lives sometimes that they go through after an accident, you know, apart from those that sometimes have lost their lives. But then, you know, we would celebrate, of course, which should be, we'll be grateful that at least 2 people survived. But then sometimes they go on to have really massive injuries that then leave them sometimes bedridden, you know. So we can just paint the picture that, you know, as much as sometimes it goes beyond just surviving an accident. You get what I mean?
First things first, besides the physical injuries, I believe one thing we perhaps take lightly is the trauma it causes to the people themselves from a mental standpoint.
Yeah.
I believe some people also go through trauma mentally and emotionally after experiencing something like that. I believe that's one of the biggest factors psychologically we need to look at. Our patients that have survived. That's point number one for me. And then secondly, you get people that end up, you know, with spinal injuries, whereby they need rehabilitation, they need a wheelchair, they're unable to walk again. Some people end up with head injuries that leave them with certain defects, okay, like amnesia, for example, okay. And but there are several injuries. People that end up, you know, they have constant pain due to the major fracture they received. So after the injury, you know, constant pain for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I should commend the MV Fund on how they assist these patients at the end of the day, if I should add that. Because the fund tries to make their life comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I should commend all the emergency services, you know, for responding on time and at least having someone that gets saved. I should commend the hospitals and all the health facilities for contributing with these patients' outcomes. But as you're saying, people do end up with injuries that stay with them long-term, like spinal injuries that lead to paralysis, like head injuries that can lead to, you know, brain defects, like amnesia and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for me, the biggest thing I believe that we take lightly is the psychological tool it has on a survivor.
That's true, hey. And for you, finally, Baron, as a paramedic that gets to deal with some of this road accidents almost on a daily basis, what does it leave you actually feeling? And given the opportunity right now, what message would you want to give out there to the public to be cautious about it and perhaps maybe to help reduce the number of accidents on our roads?
To be honest, when it comes to awareness, I believe MVA is doing their fair part in making sure there's awareness. I've experienced a number of, even emergency personnel, you know, and when I say emergency personnel, I mean all professions. some people are not acquainted with MVA's number. So disappointing. No, I'm just speaking from my honest point of view.
That's true.
Yes. So, and then civilians as well, you'll ask the people, do you know MVA's number? You know, I would actually ask them, especially when I'm giving a training, like first aid training, I'll ask them, do you know MVA's number? Like, no, they don't. So number one, I'll advise people to actually go on the MVA website, you know, do some reading on the fund, learn on their procedures. Once you see an MVA banner, or go to the MVA office themselves and go find out, who do I contact? How do I contact? How do I have assistance in such incidents, for example? Because you never know when it will be you. Go get the MVA fund desk holder. You know, do you have the number actually on your windscreen or something like that? Get acquainted with emergency personnel. You have someone to always have on speed dial, for example.
Mm.
Okay? But then the most important thing is this. We need to change our mindsets the moment you start your engine and you start driving. That's the biggest thing. As much as you must acquaint yourself with MVA fund, especially for emergencies, with all emergency personnel numbers, awareness is very beneficial. However, your mindset when you enter your car needs to change. Leave the phone. There's a phone call. Get off the road and take a phone call. Leave the distractions. Something of alcohol while driving. All those nitty-gritty stuff. And the same for pedestrians. The jaywalking, the running over the road without checking both sides. We need to educate ourselves also on those things. But we need to reduce it. Was just the attitude. Number one, in our behavior. Number two, get yourself acquainted with emergency procedures, especially when it comes to road accidents.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Perrin, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. We do appreciate your insights with us right here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. And there you had it from paramedic Ignatius Berend. He is based in Mariental and attends to many road accidents that happened that side as he's an advanced life support. Now, of course, he did speak about getting acquainted with MVA's number. That is 9682. And I repeat, 9682. It is quite important. Should you perhaps find yourself in somewhere on your way to the north or on your way to the south and you see an accident or yourself, you're involved in an accident. You don't want to, at that moment, things can happen so rushedly, so quickly. You don't want to be calling somebody to actually give you the number or Googling and you can't really get your head around it. Rather, just have it 9682. And MVA Fund obviously deals with road accidents, from all over, actually within all over Namibia, whether it's that you are in Windhoek or you are in the north, you are in Ketmanswap, that's the number to go straight to. Now, of course, also getting yourself acquainted and just educating yourself on the basics of how to actually keep yourself safe on the road. And even for you as a passenger, the things that you should know that drivers should and shouldn't do. Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Get your monthly essential products for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 kilogram each of Sugar King white sugar, Top Score Super Maize meal, and the Buck Pro Fat Cook flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King as well as 500 grams Pasta King pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save. I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Well,
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now we take you to news beyond the borders. Before we get to that, we tell you what's making headlines in terms of trading economics and Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now we start off with the US dollar. Now, $1 today equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 57 cents. £1 sterling equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 76 cents. While €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 60 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 52 cents. $1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 23 cents. And $1 Kenyan shilling is equal to 0.14 Namibian dollars. Let's move over to trading economics. France's 10-year government bond yield increased to 3.54%, the highest since March 2025, over the past 4 weeks. Now, France's 10-year bond yield gained 25.53 basis points, and in the last 12 months, it increased 50.10 basis points. Retail sales in Macedonia declined by 2.3% year-on-year in July 2025, ending a two-month rising streak and sharply reversing a 13% surge in June, which had marked the strongest growth since August 2021. Now, the renewed downturn reflected weaker demand across most major categories. Sales of food, beverages, and tobacco fell 0.4% after soaring 22.5% in June, while non-food product sales dropped 6.6%, reversing from 5.2% growth previously. Now, in addition, sales of automotive fuel rose only by 2.2%, a notable slowdown from an 8.3% in the prior month. That is excluding fuel, and overall retail trade contracted by 3.4% in July compared with a robust of 13.9% increase in June. Now, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate in Greece fell to 8% in July 2025 from an upwardly revised 9% in the previous month. Now, this marked the lowest reading since November 2008 as the number of unemployed individuals dropped by 22,400 from a month earlier to 380,900. Meanwhile, unemployment rose by 46,100 month on month to 4.4 million in July. Additionally, the number of people outside the labor force decreased by 26,000 to 2,983 million. European natural gas prices inched higher to 31.9 European dollars per megawatts per hour on Monday, halting four consecutive sessions of declines amid softer power output from renewable sources, as markets assess the outlook of gas supply ahead of the European heating season. Now, gas demand in northwestern European countries rose to over 100 gigawatt hours per day as softer temperatures coincided with softer renewable power production, mainly due to lower wind power generation. And that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators. We post right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines within News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. Now, should you want to partake in the news analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Enough for news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, where Polokwane's multi-million rand international softball stadium remains incomplete.
Due to Limpopo, the multi-million rand Polokwane International Softball Stadium is still incomplete. While the project actually started several years ago, costs have ballooned to over 180 million rand, and now there are allegations of mismanagement. SABC News reporter Lutondo Popotu is part of our team watching the story, and he joins us now live from Polokwane. And Lutondo, this is an all too familiar story.
Yes, and I said earlier that this is a state-of-art stadium that was a part of the broader plans to just broaden the city and also develop the city that is well and firmly moving in a direction of being a metropolitan. But of course, as you said, everything stagnated, everything just stalled, and now there are more questions than answers in terms of why there is no progress here. Let me just step aside a little bit, because I want to show you this kind of infrastructure. I wish we could just go in there into the site and show you every corner of the infrastructure, but we are not allowed in there just for safety purpose. This is a construction site, and the safety manager or the safety officer is not here just to walk us through the whole thing to see how this thing was planned. If you look at the concept of it, it was conceptualized 2008, and of course at the time a contractor was appointed, and he started the whole process, the whole laborious and meticulous process of starting a construction from excavation to foundation to framing and to terracing, but everything just stopped. If you look at some of the some sections of this building, you see it seems that there's been some vandalism. And of course, earlier on we spoke with the executive mayor of Polokwane just to get to know what is really going on here. What are the challenges that are stalling at the progress? Yes, of course, he talked about financial mismanagement, but he also blaming, in a way, the contractor who was appointed here, saying he may have underquoted just as a way to secure the tender here. But he's also saying now the costs are now overrunning to about something south of 200 million from just initial 85 million. You know, 85 million was earmarked to build this particular stadium. 50 million was paid to the constructor, and this is what 50 million has done, Ayanda. And that is why a lot of people are now raising questions. What is going on here? You know, hopes have been dashed. People are disgruntled. They thought this stadium will bring them jobs and make their lives better, but this is what is happening here. But when you spoke to the executive mayor this morning, he said they have now appointed another contractor who will be stepping into the site soon. He said something like tomorrow they'll be coming here to start construction. And he has promised the public that soon this stadium will be finished. But for now, this is what 50 million has done. And we'll be keeping our tabs and see if, of course, what the executive mayor said will happen. We'd like to also see progress. People out there would like to see progress, and we'll be keeping our tabs to see if that will be happening, Ayanda.
South Africa hosts a two-day media summit.
In other news, South Africa is currently hosting a two-day media summit alongside this week's G20 meetings. Journalists and media experts from around the world are coming together to talk about important issues, including climate change, global debt, technology, and making sure that people, get accurate news. The summit is also aimed at bringing together the media together, beg your pardon, to give everyone access to information and to support strong journalism. Watching the story is SABC News reporter Kailisha Khumalo, who joins us now live from Melrose Arch in Johannesburg. Kailisha, no overstating the importance of gathering like these, given even our own interactions and how important it is for the media to get the support it needs to do their jobs.
Well, very much so, and it is a very important two-day gathering. It's all about also amplifying those G20 priorities for Africa. And, of course, the media is going to be at the forefront in making sure that there's clear coverage of this all-important event, especially for the African continent, for the countries in the global south, but also just reflecting on the challenges that are facing the journalists within the G20 countries, especially, Ayanda, when you take into account all sorts of challenges facing the journalist, whether you're looking at the issues of media funding and many other issues as well. But to really reflect on the significance of this, we're joined by Catherine Azugel, Policy Director, of course, at the Forum on Information and Democracy. So, Catherine, let's look at today, the significance of this moment. A lot of issues will be amplified. Why is it so key?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. In today's world, the G20 presidency goals cannot be achieved unless we look at the information integrity crisis and the media crisis. Actually, there are coordinated, well-targeted, well-financed disinformation attacks against policymakers to distort public opinion, to change impact, and to really halt actions, for example, to create sustainable development, fight climate change. And only if we tackle this information integrity crisis, only if we tackle the crisis of sustainability and media financing and then media freedom, where media increasingly under attack, on the one hand financially, but also by actually harassment, violent attacks, can we tackle the G20 presidency goals. So the objective of today's conference is to bring attention to the topics of information integrity to the G20 leaders. We really want this to be a key element of G20 negotiations, but we also want this conference to be a moment where all the different actors come together, reflect about solutions, and think about the way forward for the G20.
And one of the key issues here, Catherine, is that during the course of the summit, we're going to see the Johannesburg Declaration. Subsequently, that will find its way to the G20 leaders, and quite a lot of issues there. You know, whether we're looking at cyber misogyny, especially for female journalists who are really, really bearing the brunt of these attacks.
One thing that we've seen over the last year is there's a huge problem with big tech accountability. At the Forum on Information and Democracy, we have developed principles for the global information space, such as protecting journalists, transparency, accountability since a long time. However, there's a huge lack of implementation. So we know different ways of how to do it. However, we need all the different players to participate. And today we see a huge backlash against any of these initiatives in the name of freedom of expression. However, this is not freedom of expression, but it's about protecting journalists, enabling them to do their work, enabling citizens to have access to reliable information.
Mm. And just before I let you go, Katerina, another very key element here will be around the viability of the media. The resources are shrinking, the funding model, among other many things as well. Some of the biggest challenges facing the media fraternity across the world.
One big problem is that the advertisement market has been traditionally a source of revenue, has been captured by big tech platforms, and media companies themselves are getting a smaller and smaller share. This is actually why today we're launching a policy brief to call upon leaders worldwide to implement a digital service tax. Big tech companies, and that money should then be earmarked to fund, at least in parts, journalism. And it's really the polluters pay principles that can be used as an argument to make big tech contribute to media viability and media sustainability.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Of course, I understand that, Katerina. So one of the main speakers here during the course of the morning, we're going to hear from the Minister of Communications and, of course, digital technologies. Mr. Solly Malatsi is scheduled to be a main speaker today, but it's bound to be a very riveting moment, but also very soul-searching for the media fraternity right here in South Africa. You do have the South African National Editors Forum alongside Media Monitoring Africa, really, and many other sponsors who will have an opportunity to address the delegates. So with that, back to you in studio.
All right, Kailisha Kumalo, thanks very much indeed. Try our very best, of course, not to miss a beat. Kailisha is live to us from Melrose Arch.
Meanwhile, in Zambia, a heroic driver saves 57 passengers before the bus bursts into flames.
We caught up with the man of the moment as he was leaving church before he led us to his home in Lusaka, Zanimone West. Berrington Mwape, a bus driver, has become the center of attention after his quick intervention saved the lives of 57 passengers on his bus, which later went up in flames. This happened shortly after the bus left Lusaka's intercity bus terminus for Nakonde. The 38-year-old father of three recalls the terrifying moments.
So after Nakamana Kachunshi, Nadisa parking a bus. Ja first in checking. Safety ni first. So naiminina, na checking na isa sangati chunshi, chirefu mina mukati, kama boots. So before nshira isula, before nshira chitapo efilifionze, nariya mkufunye wa customer. Bambiwari kana, bambiwari panga kwa ifitala, kwa ifitala kwa kwati, kwa tifira mletari kanja, pari problemu. Narisa lolesha nje inga ipirile sana pano, umudiro ufule pano, ayama filling station yangu, ya lapia. Mashops na ena, ya lapia. So narisa ingira mo, kuifunya hapo basi pale. Kuituala kwa hapa kwe wati, tapali ya mashops.
With more than 25 years behind the wheel, Berrington says this is the first time he has faced such a life-threatening situation.
First time ufya nchitikira po efya so. Kwenye ama basi, pafesti nalikuwe NFCA. Chambeshi, Copper Belt. Nalikumaini, nakwene nalikuwe ama basi. Theni, na chita resign kulia, na isa join na BEM Motors, Power Tools.
He also has a message for fellow public service drivers on the importance of safety.
Ukweshi afi ukoseresha kuwa driver wanandi. Safety first. Safety first. Kairi, ngatu wasenda wa passenger, then itabali safe, nishi naifu tatuli safe.
And for his mother, Violet Kalumba, there's only gratitude to God for sparing her son's life. Since the accident on Friday, August 29, Berrington has been resting at home and is expected back at work on Monday.
The Health Ministry in Uganda set to revive cost-sharing policy for public facilities.
By African Union member states to allocate at least 15% of their national budgets to health. This financial year, government allocated 8.1% of the national budget to health, equivalent to 5.87 trillion shillings. This is a slight increment from the 2024-25 financial year's 4% or 2.95 trillion for health alone. The consistent underfunding for the health sector could partly explain why you are charged when you seek healthcare services in government facilities. On several occasions, this also hinders the way our health system functions. For example, while launching results from a study on lung cancer, health experts expressed worry on the future of diagnosis following the closure of the research project that funded the critical areas.
This thing, the biopsy, is very expensive, about $300. Most patients cannot afford. So now this project has been paying for that. All the costs involved, the project has been what? Paying. Now it is going to stop. I am sure pulmonology ward is going to start filling up again. Most of our patients will die before they have arrived to us.
Government's efforts to offer specialized healthcare services cannot be fully achieved because of the shortages in funding.
Lago National Referral Hospital, they are high-end procedures. We ask patients to pay something for those procedures. And we want to encourage everybody, to encourage people to contribute for their healthcare, because government will not manage to meet that cost. We have not brought on board the health insurance, and I can assure you it will be hard for government to meet that cost. We have managed to revive the MRI services without people contributing to that equipment, care. We shall not sustain it. And then you end up going in the private place to pay three times as much. So please give us small contribution and help us to sustain the service, and we all enjoy the service.
But we need to make sure that money is allocated to some of these super specialized services, such that if we ever need them, we can use them.
According to Dr. Charles Ayume, who formerly chaired the Parliamentary Health Commission, much of the budget allocated to government specialized hospitals ends up in wages and consumables, a disadvantage to the operations.
You know, there are basic services that we can provide free. Antenatal care, immunization, basically maternal and child health services, certain treatment of certain infectious diseases. But as we go up into what we call specialized and super specialized care, the number, the caliber of specialists you need, they come at a cost. The equipment that you need comes at a cost. The infrastructure and so forth, the wear and tear, is all expensive. So we are saying, can at least the public pay something, however small it is, for the maintenance, for the consumables, for the supply? I would want to tell you, like, for example, when it comes to dialysis, each filter which is you dispose is about 279,000 shillings, close to 300,000 shillings. That is just the filter. You're not looking at the wear and tear of the machine and so forth. But we are putting our dialysis between 80 to 120,000 per session. That means government is subsidizing a lot. When you go to CT scans, when you go to cardiology, oncology, and so forth, now our question we should be asking ourselves is, should we have free services, but every time you go, the machine is broken down, there are no filters, and we are happy that the services are free, but the machines are not working. You've deployed a very beautiful machine in an upcountry remote area, but you don't have the requisite specialists, the number of specialists.
The permanent secretary in the Ministry of Health, Dr. Diana Atwine, explains that they are advancing discussions on the revival of the cost-sharing policy.
Cost-sharing used to exist, but I think there was a problem along the way in implementation, and I think the president and cabinet and as top policymakers stopped that. However, we still left a window of private wing, which are not really fully functional, I must say. Alternative health financing has worked the whole world over. What we are talking about is not new. We are not talking about something that we are reinventing the wheel. All of many countries, including the rich countries, in the UK, in America, all those rich countries, you will not walk into a hospital and get free care. You must contribute through insurance. So here, although we think that the money we get is sufficient to deal with the problems, it is not. It will never. And no country has provided 100% health care with all the needs. No. They have done that through contributing. And then the other person also comes, except the indigent. So the people who are really, they have no job, they are very poor. Those ones the state takes care of. But we have...
Nigeria pushes a bill to boost women's representation in parliament.
Peace Dokers has been part of politics since 2011, mostly as a mobilizer and supporter. She says many women shy away from contesting because party politics is still seen as a man's affair. Now she's working with a women's group to encourage more women to run in future elections.
When you have a certain gender represented and the other not represented, there's no how you're going to tell me that my concerns are communicated and attended to, right, properly, because of course I don't have someone who understands what I go through, understands what it means for me to actually be governed and also govern. So there's no how you can tell me that there's fairness and democracy is in play.
Nigeria has two houses of parliament with 469 members in total. Just 20 of them are women. That's around 4% of the number of MPs. The Interparliamentary Union ranks Nigeria near the bottom globally in terms of women representation in politics. A new bill seeks to change that, creating one additional seat for women in each state in both houses, plus three special seats for women in every state assembly.
There is the patriarchal part of it where they will say a woman's place is in the kitchen or in the other room, not in the table of decision. All these things are mitigating against women going for office. Also, the part of the money to do campaigns. Women don't have that kind of money. The time that they do their meetings during the election time is also not favorable for a woman because she's married, she has children, and her husband can begin to suspect that she's doing something untoward because she went for a meeting in the middle of the night.
Supporters argue that more women in parliament would bring balance to decision-making and point to Nigerian women already excelling on the world stage.
A woman is the person that would take Nigeria to where we have been hoping it will go to, because when you look at women that have held positions in Nigeria, they've done exceptionally well. We have Amina, what's the position she's currently? Thank you, United Nations. We have Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. I can't name them. We have so many women doing exceptionally well. Yes, international, even here in Nigeria. So, yes, let's give them more opportunities.
The bill has already passed two readings in Parliament and faces one final hurdle before it becomes law.
The push for reserved seats is testing Nigeria's democracy in new ways, and the outcome could set a precedent across Africa where women remain largely underrepresented in politics. For campaigners here, the next few weeks in Parliament will be decisive. Tasim Akindi, CGTN Jos, Nigeria.
And now for market talk, oil prices to drop to mid to high $50.
Oil prices are facing an uphill struggle as bullish bets drop to an 18-year low. Money managers have grown less bullish on crude for four straight weeks amid growing concerns that the oil market is barreling towards a supply surplus near the end of the year. Meanwhile, geopolitical uncertainties and the US-led trade war continue to ravage the outlook for energy consumption. Naveen Das is a senior oil analyst at Kepler. So Naveen, let's start with geopolitics first. President Trump hasn't made good on threats to tighten restrictions on Russia's oil exports. Are traders right to unwind bullish bets that Moscow supplies will be limited?
To an extent, yes. As you mentioned earlier, financial positioning on both Brent and WTI futures have been moving shorter in recent weeks, suggesting that flows are skewing slightly to the downside to unwind these bullish bets. The most recent data shows that net long bets for WTI crude are now at the lowest since 2007, and short-only bets are at a 20-month high. That suggests that hedge funds are turning more bearish there. Brent, on the other hand, has seen an increase in both long and short positions on the week. Nonetheless, President Trump continues to be quite phased, or not that phased, with how the Russia-Ukraine war has progressed. He's quite frustrated with the lack of progress. And as such, I think there is still a little bit of geopolitical premium, both in WTI and Brent, for prices.
Meanwhile, Russian oil exports to India are set to rise in September despite secondary tariffs. Will there always be a buyer of Russian oil?
I believe.
And now we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. From me, Ndafa Happy Juju, yes, goodbye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.